the views expressed in this program are those of the individual participants and not necessarily those of WVUD or the University of Delaware.
WVUD presents Campus Voices, conversations with University of Delaware faculty, staff, and students about their teaching, research, service projects, and other interests. To introduce today's guest, here's your host, Richard Gordon.
Thank you, Jason. And joining us in the studio today for Campus Voices, we have two current students and a UD alumni who all are associated with some of the service learning projects that go on here at the University of Delaware. Kathleen?
Yes?
Tell the folks who you are.
Hi, I'm Kathleen Luckner. I'm a junior nursing major here at UD, and I went to Jamaica last spring break.
Vinu, tell the folks at home who you are.
Hi, I'm Vinayak Rajendran. I usually go by Vinu. I'm from Delaware. I'm a biomedical engineering junior here, and I'm involved with the Go Baby Go program at UD with Dr. Galloway, and through that, the Assistive Medical Technologies Club.
And last but not least, we have a UD alum, Sarah Lefebvre, class of 2011. Hi, Sarah.
Hello. So I graduated from our School of Nursing in 2011, and I just couldn't get enough of UD, so I'm back here working in the College of Health Sciences.
I'm going to start with you because you started a very successful service project. It started off as a club, and now it has its own website and everything. Lori's Hands. Tell us about that.
So Lori's Hands is a service learning organization. It's named in memory of my mom. She was a breast cancer patient. I really got to kind of see when she was sick and going through treatment, the effect that having a chronic illness can have on families. And when I came here to UD, kind of in the wake of her passing when I was in high school, I really wanted to start something that would connect students with people like my mom who had had, you know, a chronic illness. And so a group of my friends and I got together and started Lori's Hands. And we started making home visits to people who have chronic illnesses to assist them with just the everyday stuff that can be really tough when you have a chronic illness. And so, we've got hundreds of students since 2009 who've been involved in Lori's Hands, and we've since turned it into a nonprofit organization. And it's also been connected to a couple courses on campus, so it's really grown in the years that we've been involved.
That sounds like the ultimate job of making lemons into lemonade for you and your family.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the things that was hardest about losing my mom was just feeling like all we did was miss her and talk about how much it sucked that she passed away. And I wanted something really positive to come out of having lost her. And so now we know that because we lost her, there are all these wonderful things that happen on campus and things that students get to learn kind of in her name and in her memory. So it's made something positive come out of something that was really hard for our family.
I thought it was really cool that you selected the name Lori's Hands because her name's Lori, and you guys are going out into the community, being her hands, helping others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and my mom was, she was just an incredibly compassionate person, and she didn't make a big show out of her service, which I think is something that, I just found really honorable. She didn't do things just to have her name on a billboard. She was just really quiet and humble in the way that she helped other people. And so I kind of see that in the way that our students work with our clients, that they're so kind and compassionate. They don't make a big show. They just do the little things that people need. And it just is really a nice tribute to the kind of person that she was.
How many UD students are currently involved in projects through Lori's Hands?
So right now we serve 30 clients a week. So there are 30 people in Newark who get a weekly visit that they can depend on from our students. And typically it's two students per visit. So some of our students go on one or two visits a week, and some are involved kind of on a smaller scale, going a few times a semester. We've had dozens of people that we've served and hundreds of students involved over the years.
And so this is now part of the curriculum, actually, at the University of Delaware and the School of Nursing, and they've invited you back to help run it.
Yeah, I don't know what they were thinking, but they allowed me to kind of be a part of creating this course whereby the students in the classroom learn about chronic illness and sort of the human experience of illness. It's not so much about, you know, the cellular level of what's happening in disease, but more about how people socially and culturally experience the illness that they have. And part of the course requirements are for the students to go out and make home visits to see our Lori's Hands clients. And so that for them kind of brings to life everything that we're talking about in the classroom. And then it also accomplishes, you know, I get a lot more service to the people that we provide services to.
And Kathleen, you're also a nursing major. I mean, Lori's Hands and the things that Sarah has set up and the things going on in the college really sound to me like they emphasize the caring part of nursing, not just the technical part.
Yes, that's true. Lori's Hands is really big. Sarah made it a couple years ago, and it has grown so much. I have a lot of friends really involved in Lori's Hands, and we get involved with other ways, too. Like, we went on a service trip over spring break.
Yeah, and that's the thing I wanted to talk to you about. You went to Jamaica. And
yes.
You didn't go surfing.
Oh, no.
Or out the ganja or go on the beach.
No, we went to Kingston, so it was definitely a culture shock. They live very differently there. There was a lot of homeless people, and the population that we worked with was kids with physical and mental disabilities, so they had the bare minimum. When we were there, we really didn't have a lot of running water. Like, we showered in rainwater that they collected, and it was definitely different over there, and it was interesting to see how thankful they are with so little.
Now, you actually did some clinical work while you were there. It wasn't just to help kids with chores around the house kind of thing.
Yes. We went through an organization called the Mustard Seed Communities, and they have a bunch of trips that go down, groups that go down for a whole week, and ours was a little different than the normal trip because we were all nursing majors, and we brought a clinical instructor with us, Diane Rodolfi. So we were able to do more of the nursing things. Like, we set up a clinic down there, and we gave free health screenings to all the kids and the staff that worked there.
You told me that you had to help some of the kids with their eating as well.
Yes. A lot of the children have difficulty swallowing, so that is a problem when they eat. Like, they could breathe in their food, which is called aspiration. So we had to learn different techniques before we went. We had a nurse from Christiana come in and teach us how to feed the children properly. So we went down there and we taught some of the nurses different tricks, like to give them water while they ate to help go down the right track.
This really was a clinical experience for you in a different country. What did you bring home from that?
Well, when we do things here in lab, like in McDowell, we listen to each other's lungs and each other's hearts. So we're all pretty healthy 20-year-olds, but down there they're all very sick and they have severe disabilities. So it was different to be able to hear all the abnormal findings, and we discovered heart murmurs and different abnormal lung sounds, like wheezes and crackles, that we were able to send them to doctors to hopefully catch things early, so hopefully they can live long, healthy lives.
So this was a little bit different. I mean, Lori's Hands has really, I think, sounds to me like it really focuses on the service aspect. But what you've been doing is obviously this was a service project, but really you also brought back some more clinical experience.
Yes, we learned so much.
Vinny, we haven't let you talk yet. We let the ladies go.
ladies first, yeah.
But you've been involved in one of the sexiest service projects on campus, the Go Baby Go program. Why don't you tell us about that? Because there are lots of different components of that.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and I think that sexy is definitely the right way to describe it, with the how much attention that we've been getting in this past year. So Go Baby Go is a project where we modify, or one of the main components is where we modify power wheels or other ride-on cars so that they're assistive devices for children with disabilities. So children with cerebral palsy or Down syndrome, they can't really move around that well. And that limiting of their mobility really hinders them from exploring their environment. It makes them less excited about it as well. And it reduces the amount of independence, because now you have mom and dad running around and controlling everything the child is doing. They don't have that free will to run around and break your crystal ornament on the fireplace. That's something that's important. And that's something that we really we want that as much as mom and dad don't. So we modify these cars, so we put in these safety kill switches for the parents, and we put on these easy activation buttons that we call Big Reds. So these activation buttons, you can press anywhere on the surface area, and it's a very large surface area, and just with the slightest touch, the car will activate and the kid will move. And it's really, really exciting when you first see a kid sit in one of these cars, because they sit down and they're just like, this is normal. And then, like, they might, like, move around a little bit, start whining to mom, and they'll accidentally hit the button. They'll be like, whoa, car just jolted forward. What just happened? And then they'll, like, slowly try and whip their arm around and then hit the button and be like, whoa. So it's like, this thing is making me have some sensation here. And then, so they kind of like hold down on the button, and the kids pick it up really, really quickly. And so now they, in about like maybe 10 seconds for like some, for most kids, they're hitting this, they're holding down this button and they're moving. And this is something that they've never experienced before because they're doing it themselves. They're seeing mom and dad in the distance, and now they're cheering, they're encouraging them. And the kid, that smile when those kids start moving is just, it's probably the thing that makes the most worthy thing that we do. I've seen kids just be like, oh, this is the most boring thing ever, and just kind of head slam down, like, and they happen to hit the wheel, and the car jolts forward, and they're like, whoa. And so they're like pushing their head down, just like banging on the button with their head, and just having just some form of movement, some form of action, and having a movement response from that goes, it's enormous in how impactful it is for these kids with these disabilities.
Is it amplifying a motion they're making, or is it just sort of taking them someplace?
It's just, so they hit, when they hit the button, it activates motors in the wheels, and it, so it activates the button. So instead of having your normal, like in a normal power wheel, you have like those foot pedals that you can press, or like a button activation.
Yeah.
Those are really hard for a kid to access with if they have certain disabilities. So this button replaces that and makes it easy, more easily accessible, along with structural supports that we built in. So we use PVC to add some more support. We'll put in some like industrial strength Velcro as seat belts and like headrests so that they can feel their motion and also be safely contained inside.
Can they control it and go where they want to go, or is it?
That's actually a good question, because so we have our normal sitting car, and you can steer that, but for a lot of kids, like, that's very difficult for them. For the kids that can do it, we'll add like a little like steering bar on like one side, so they can grab with their left hand steer, and then hold the button down with their right hand. With our standing car, so this is a car that doesn't do anything when you're sitting down, but activates if you lift up and, like, you hold on to the PVC railings. So when you're standing up, the car will go, but when you sit down, the car stops. So there, a lot of the kids, you'll see, they either hold on to the PVC supports or they'll hold on to the steering wheel. If they hold on to the steering wheel, they can steer. And then one of our newest cars that we have a couple of prototypes of now is a joystick-driven model where you can the kid has entire control of what direction they move in. They can go forward, backward, left, right. It has proportional control, so you can if you're only moving the joystick like halfway forward, you'll go half speed, and all the way is all speed. So it has full range of motion, which is really important for children inside of a household because they have to navigate these tight turns. Whereas the other cars, you really have to kind of focus on outside. So,
as you've been talking about it, the young ladies, Kathleen and Sarah, been nodding and smiling along. Have you guys had experience with the Go Baby Go project?
Yeah, and so, I mean, now that I've graduated, I work in the College of Health Sciences, and our dean, Kathy Matt, created my position because she believes so strongly in service, and my position is the first coordinator for service and experiential learning that a college has ever had before.
Any of the seven colleges at UD?
I believe that's true, yeah.
Wow.
We're the first. And so I have the pleasure every day of, I work at the Star Campus, and to get to where I sit at my desk, I have to pass Venu's lab and Dr. Galloway's work. And so, I mean, it's just pretty incredible, like, to, you know, to see kids and their families come in and to feel so enthusiastic about this service that we're providing to them. I mean, it's research for our researchers, but for these community members, it's just a pure service that they now have this enhanced mobility. And I mean, one thing that I thought was really cool about it was for some of these kids, I mean, this truly is like physical therapy for them because it's, you know, kids who need to build up strength in certain parts of their bodies. Like we want to encourage them to stand. And so the car will only go when they're standing. And so a kid might not want to do typical physical therapy, but when doing the therapy makes the car go and it's really cool, then they're going to do it and they're going to do it longer. And so I think that's pretty amazing to turn therapy into something fun.
How old are the kids that are doing this or using the Go Baby Go cars?
So 6 months is usually typical to maybe up to 4 years old to me because we made a adult ride-on car over the summer. So we have the whole entire range on the board here. And it's really cool, though, because powered wheelchairs. So this kind of idea was inspired by powered wheelchairs that had these development for these kids, and it gave them the ability to move and control a joystick and all that stuff. But it was these giant behemoths that weigh a gazillion pounds, and you can only access them with insurance at the age of 3. And if you don't do that, then you have to pay tens of thousands of dollars to get
And the whole idea is that before the age of 3, you still need to be developing muscles if you're going to try to move on beyond whatever disability you're trying to improve.
Exactly.
Because
the current theory, I guess like taken as a standard now, is that you should wait till these kids are smart enough to operate these powered wheelchairs. But it's also shown that you can increase the speed at which the kids learn if you just give them the wheelchair. So when they're in the wheelchair, their learning becomes faster. So we're waiting to put them in this wheelchair, like, at a later, when they can learn. What's the point of that? If you put them in these cars early, when they can learn their entire life, like, start with the chance that they can be mobile, you can now let them learn how to get to that point, and so they're already developing and learning on a more normal time scale.
Kathleen, I'm going to ask you a hard question.
Okay.
Because you also were working with pediatric patients down in Jamaica.
Yes.
What kinds of things that Vinu and Sarah have been talking about fit your experience with the students at the orphanage?
Well, I mean, unfortunately, they are at an orphanage, and it is in Kingston, Jamaica, so they don't have a lot of money. But they do have some donated wheelchairs, but they're very out of date. They're very old, and they're not electronic at all. Someone has to be behind the kids pushing them. So I think that they would definitely benefit from something like Vinu was saying, where if they move a certain way, like it would move the car. I think that would stimulate them.
What are some of the observations you have on working with kids in this situation that are different from working with regular patients?
Like in the hospitals in the U.S.?
Yeah.
Well, the kids down there, they don't have a lot of supplies, like I was saying. So they kind of group the kids together, whereas here, if someone's like in the hospital, they can continue their education. But down there, some of them don't even go to school. They do a lot of like music therapy and everything, but they just don't have a lot. And they work with what they can, but they definitely need more supplies and more help down there.
Now, music therapy, that sounds like something up my alley. It's That's often a very effective way of communicating with a child. I mean, just like the Go Baby Go cars inspire certain emotional and intellectual response in addition to the muscle response.
Yes. Every morning at one of the sites that we went to, they circle up all the kids. So the kids that can sit in chairs, they'll put there, or in wheelchairs, they'll circle everyone up. And they have songs that they sing every single day. So some of the kids that are verbal, they can sing along. Some of them just like scream along with the music, and they hand out instruments. So kids can like shake a tambourine, or they have ribbons that they can play with. And if kids can walk, then they'll get up and dance and everything. So it definitely enables communication.
I think all three of you have been working with different kinds of projects that make it very clear that it's important to keep patients, whatever their age, active.
I think it's important to keep patients active, but also to kind of help them restore some or maintain some sense of self and independence. That, you know, it's so important that healthcare providers and people in general can kind of look beyond a diagnosis and an illness or a disability and help people live as normal and as fulfilling a life as possible. And I think that's part of kind of all of our motivation, that it's not just about like giving that immunization to a a kid, but it's about figuring out how can this kid have the resources that he needs to live a really fulfilling and meaningful life to, you know, whatever capacity he can. And that's, I mean, you know, that's what we try to do with our Lori's Hands clients too, that, you know, it's not so much about getting the dresser, you know, dusted when our students are there. It's so much about having a friendly face in the house and having conversation. For these people, a lot of them are homebound, and having a 20-year-old kid come in and just show that they care and, you know, I mean, it just restores somebody's sense of hope and kind of makes the day worth living. So that's sort of what it's about in the end, I guess.
Well, one of the things that I know from, I've had family members who, you know, were oncology patients, and one of the things that's really important for the patient is to try and get them interacting with people as a person, mm-hmm. not as a case.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I think that what my goal is, you know, for all of our students who are coming through our health sciences programs is that, yes, they get that foundation. They understand the biology and the, you know, the physiology and all of that. But that along the way, they're picking up this humanistic piece, and that they're really building the empathy that they already come into school with, and that they're going to be the providers who go the extra mile and look at their patients as people and, you know, want to know people's stories and, you know, really involve the patient in their care, because they'll see people and not just charts when they get out into the field.
Now, Vinod, as a biomedical engineer, you're collaborating with people in all sorts of different departments on things like the Go Baby Go vehicles, the exoskeletons, and all that kind of stuff.
So one of the coolest things about working in the pediatric mobility lab, which is where Go Baby Go is housed, is that ride on cars isn't the only thing that we do. We focus on any improvement that we can for children with the entire spectrum of mobility disabilities, because play is key for these children. So one of the focuses in the lab is for wearable technologies. Working with we have engineering students, senior design teams, but we're also working with fashion. We are taking the concepts of engineering and working with fashion in order to apply it in a real-life setting. So one of the exoskeletons that was developed at AI, the P-Rex, so it's this pediatric 3D-printed exoskeleton for children with arthrogryposis. So these children have really, really weak biceps, but normally develop triceps. So they can't really do anti-gravity motions. They can't pick things up. They can't really lift their arms. And putting them in the P-Rex allows them to have functional mobility. They can lift their arms up. They can move their elbows. And they can, like, now explore this entire new area just above. And that's important for, like, if you're, like, picking up a ball and that kind of thing. There's so many different play items that are associated with that. But you can't, like, for example, take a kid in the P-Rex and, like, you've just done, like, a session at the hospital, and then you're going home, and you put them in the car, and the car seat doesn't accommodate the thickness of the elements of the P-Rex. So what is this kid supposed to do? Parents are deciding now when these kids are allowed to be mobile. You are in the P-Rex, now you're in the car, so I'm going to take this away from you. And so you don't have the ability to use your arms. So it's the parents making the decisions again. So one of the cool things that was developed by our lab was the PlaySkin. So what it uses is just taking a normal onesie and you sew in these canals on the side, very easy to do, and you take piano wire. If you take more strands of piano wire and you put in heat shrink tubing, you can kind of make these tensile inserts is what we call them. So if I say put in 20 pieces, I have a certain amount of tension. If I put in 30 pieces, I have more tension. And you just slip them in the canals, and now it lifts the child's arms so that they're up, and now they have access to the upper world. So they can push down using their triceps and pick up a ball. And then what the PlaySkin will do is just use the tension to lift their arms back up. And this is fashionable. It's typically looking.
And it fits in a car seat.
Fits in a car seat excellently. These children have the ability. It's not necessarily rehabilitative, but it's functional. So maybe if we use less tension and made them go instead of to 90 degrees, put them 75 degrees, they can work that last 15 degrees and slowly build up muscle. Also, it's normal. You can take out the inserts and wash the onesie, and then put them back in when you need to. So you can put it in a washing machine. Entirely normal. Fits into the daily lives very easily. It still needs work, but it's the concept that matters, right? We can make different wearable technologies that fit in a normal daily life setting and is easy for parents to use. So it's really just taking engineering and taking all of the other disciplines and putting them together, and what kind of solutions can we come up with for that?
We're talking with Kathleen Luckner and Vinayak Rajadharan, who usually goes by Vinu, and Sarah LaFave, two University of Delaware students and one University of Delaware alum, who have been very involved with different service learning projects here at the university. Kathleen?
Yes.
What do you think you're going to take out of these service projects that you've been involved in? You've been to Jamaica. Are you going to be doing some others?
Yes, we're actually going back to Jamaica this spring break.
Awesome.
The application is up online, and it closes October 13th. It's through UDAB, which is the University of Delaware Alternative Breaks, but we wanted to make a healthcare one, which is why we started the nursing trip.
Which is why you want this to air before October 13th on WVUD. Vinu?
So the Mobility Challenge is an event hosted by Assistive Medical Technologies. We're an RSO that volunteers with the Go Baby Go Lab. Not only do we want to develop different solutions for children's mobility issues, we want to really raise awareness about how much of an impact that has for these children and on their lives in the future. So we plan on October 29th to be restricting the upper extremity mobility of students around the University of Delaware. Various groups have teams from RSOs like Making Doctors, National Society of Black Engineers, hoping to get teams from Greek Life.
But the idea is to give the students the idea of what these children are
exactly
feeling.
So we're going to be restricting their upper extremity mobility and having them go around for the day, doing different tasks and taking pictures and sending them to us. And that's all going to culminate in this huge field event that we're going to have from 4 to 7. We're going to have games, fun activities, insomnia cookies. It'll be great. So come out.
I think it's really cool that there's so many RSOs and formal projects to encourage you all to do these things. Vinu, what do you think you're going to take out of some of this stuff? Are you going to go and work in a lab when you graduate, do you think? Or?
So I hope to, right now I'm pre-med as well as biomedical engineering, so I hope to take what I'm learning here and what I'm learning with service and kind of taking the same concept, taking engineering and medicine and putting it together. And how can we maximize like what we're learning there? So I want to go into surgical critical care.
But the stuff you're doing with the kids, too, is going to help your bedside manner once you're my age and a surgeon, you know, because you have had this experience working with the little kids.
Exactly. And I think, like, I was talking to a doctor once, and they were telling me that everything is by the book in medicine. So you just have to learn, like, the order. It's like you do this algorithm and you just follow these steps. But I was never convinced by that. I strongly believe that if you take the more creative the solution, the better that you can attack the problem. You have to make medicine individualized, and you have to make it creative and applicable, or else it's not successful.
Sarah, as a graduate, you were one of the earliest ones to do a major service project, but certainly one of the very visible service projects starting back in 2009. I think that what's one of the things that UD now does a really good job of getting students involved in alternative breaks and other opportunities for service. And that's your job now.
Yeah, I mean, I think that this is a pretty supportive environment for students to kind of launch service projects. UD can just incubate student ideas. I remember when I wanted to start Lori's Hands, walking into one of my professor's offices, and, you know, he had just taught my pathophysiology class, and I'd had him for like two classes. And I walk in, this sophomore nursing student, and I'm like, hey, I've got this really cumbersome, off-the-wall idea. Want to help me do it? You know, and he never even blinked. I mean, he was just like, yep, this is what we're going to do. This is wonderful. We need to do this. And it was the same thing. I remember when Kathleen and one of her peers approached Diane Rudolphy and said, you know, we want to start this service break, the service trip to spring break. Want to give up your spring break to come with us and teach clinical over your vacation? And she was just
How could she say no?
Absolutely.
She said no at first, but we convinced her.
Yeah. I think that it's partially kind of the job that UD does in incubating these ideas, but also, I mean, we just attract students who, you know, are into this stuff. We have really great students, so they come here kind of already with the passion, and then we just help kind of make things possible, I guess.
Well, thank you, Sarah, and thank you, Vinu, and thank you, Kathleen, and I hope more students and who are listening to the show will consider signing up for an alternative break or looking for a service opportunity here on campus. Thank you, guys.
Very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Campus Voices. The views expressed on this program are those of the individual guests and do not necessarily reflect the official views or policies of WVUD or the University of Delaware. For more information about Campus Voices and to find archive copies of this and other episodes, visit our website. Using all lowercase letters, go to www.udel.edu/campusvoices. We invite you to tune in every Thursday morning at 8:30 for Campus Voices on 91.3 FM, WVUD, and WVUD HD1, Newark, or online at wvud.org.